Want to drive greater success in social commerce? With Deloitte's latest creator economy research, you can. After surveying over 500 creators and 500 brands, our insights are helping CMOs and marketing teams harness the power of content creators. And not only that, but how to do it well. See for yourself by visiting cmo.deloitte.com today. What's the first brand you remember making an impact on you as a young girl?
Calvin Klein and the Brooke Shields jeans. That's one of those iconic brand moments for me in the 80s. Brooke Shields was just like the epitome of cool for me at that time. And the punchiness for the time of those ads and how then they built on it for many years to come.
Did you buy the jeans?
Of course.
Okay. Hi, I'm Jim Stengel, and I help major brands find their purpose and activate it, and the profits follow. For 7 years, I was the global marketing officer for Procter & Gamble, where I oversaw the marketing of hundreds of brands. You may not know it, but the CMOs, the chief marketing officers of all of your favorite brands, are trying to connect you with your favorite products and services through purpose. And on this show, I delve into how they do it.
My guest today on the CMO podcast is Dina Lamarque-Piquan, the Chief Growth and Disruption Officer at Xerox, the 118-year-old workplace products and services company. Xerox, of course, holds a special place in brand history. It, like Kleenex, Google, and Coke, is one of the few brands that became synonymous with its category. Well, today, Xerox is a $7 billion company and more diversified than the Xerox you likely remember. The current slogan, "We make work work," says it all. In January, Xerox announced a new operating model and organizational structure to accelerate its progress. We will talk about that. And our guest, Dina, was elevated from Chief Marketing Officer to her current position as part of that reorganization. Dina is a fitting guest for us in Women's History Month. On her Facebook page, she describes herself as, quote, mother, inspirational leader, and business-minded executive dedicated to raising kind and productive kids. Dina is a first-generation American. She studied political science and government at Vassar and earned a master's at Georgetown in foreign service. Through a chance meeting at Georgetown with a CEO, Dina started her business career in Miami with Tech Data, a giant IT distribution company. Dina then spent 19 years at Tech Data before joining Xerox in 2019. This is my Women's History Month conversation with a woman making history. Here's Dina.
Well, Dina, welcome to the CMO podcast. We met in Miami last December at a CMO roundtable during Art Basel, Miami, where I moderated this discussion with a relationship coach, Jillian Turecki. And the conversations got pretty personal. Do you remember much about that roundtable in Miami in mid-December of last year?
I do. It was a great roundtable, and the emotional aspect of that roundtable was quite unprecedented. Actually, I think it's the first time I heard menopause raised in a situation like that.
Well, here's what I remember, and I want you to sort of react to this. I remember Jillian kind of just stopped the conversation when she said, "You know, she's been studying relationships for a long time." She said there are four needs all humans have. And the first was for stability and security. And the second one is adventure, which fights a little bit stability and security. The next was to be unique and important in some way. And the last was the need for connection and love. So I would kind of like to start there and just get your reaction to those four themes vis-a-vis your work, your life, your relationships, and anything you'd want to share about what that made you think about or what you're thinking about now as we talk about it.
Absolutely. I mean, it was profound, actually. And I did come home and share. I took notes and I shared with some friends and with my husband those four needs, because I think they're so relevant to work relationships, to personal relationships, right? As a leader, you know, I read a quote the other day, leadership isn't about being in charge, it's about taking care of those in your charge. And so understanding the needs that people have and really meeting them in those needs, I think is so important. And in marketing, we have such an opportunity on the adventure side that sometimes people don't have in other organizations or other functions. But I think no matter where you are, you know, you have to provide stability, but you also have to provide that adventure, that sense of passion and fun in for what you're doing in life.
Well, we had our Super Bowl episode on the show a couple of weeks ago, and adventure was a big theme, right? If you jump onto the Super Bowl as a brand platform, you better be ready for making it an adventure or you're going to be lost.
Absolutely. And all the, I mean, I've loved seeing the roundup from Brand Week, from Gary Vee on all, you know, all the best Super Bowl ads and everybody's takes on those. It's so interesting. You got to be ready. If you throw yourself in, you have to be ready.
Yeah, it's always fun. Now, by the way, before we leave December Art Basel, Miami, that was my first time there sort of doing CMO stuff. And I just wondered, do you think it's a good gathering place for CMOs to come together? I mean, we go to Cannes, we go to the ANA, we go to South by Southwest, we go to CES. But what do you think about Art Basel Miami as a place to go for inspiration, for connections, for meeting people, for creativity?
I think Art Basel is quickly becoming one of those locations mm-hmm. where you can meet, you know, like-minded peers, colleagues from the industry. It wasn't always, right? Miami has changed tremendously since I moved here. But I think now it is on par with a lot of those other events.
Yeah, I agree with you. We're recording this show in March, which is, of course, Women's History Month. And you were a great guest for us to herald this month on the CMO podcast. You're a first-generation American. Your parents, who are from Haiti, really, really value education. And you have a degree from Vassar in Georgetown. And you've been a really successful woman executive in tech for about 25 years. And all the while raising, and I'm quoting you, kind, thoughtful, and responsible kids with your entrepreneur husband. So I'm sure your parents are very proud of you. And if I ask them, what is it about Dina that makes her so special? What would they say, or what story would they tell?
Wow, that's a great question to start with. My father is deceased, but my mother does live with me and with our kids, and my family gets to benefit from her every day because she's one of the most thoughtful and caring people I know. But I think she'd say strength and courage, you know, honesty. I think those are kind of the three things she'd probably say about me. If you're going to ask a question, I'm going to tell you the truth. Probably the strength and perseverance have helped me along the way, especially in tech. I've never reported to a woman in my professional career in tech. And so you definitely have to carve out your own space and drive your own courage to speak up, to raise your hand, to disagree, to have ideas.
Is there a story she likes to tell about you that brings those characteristics out?
There is one, actually, that we laugh about often now, especially as I'm getting ready to get into the college preparation years with my kids. So as you said, I'm first generation Haitian American, grew up in Long Island. My parents made sure that we went to great schools, and we lived in a town. Taxes were high. Public schools were great. That's why they moved there. They expected a certain amount of preparation for college from the high school guidance counselor. And actually, the high school guidance counselor several times tried to discourage me from applying to some of the schools I applied to, including Vassar, and said, I think you're reaching too high. I think you need to add more safety schools to your list. And, you know, my parents were new to this country. They weren't familiar with all of the processes. But I remember coming home very annoyed one day and telling my mom this story. And my mom was like, don't pay attention. Do what you think is right. I trust you. You know what you can achieve. You apply where you think you want to go and where you think you can get in. And I ended up not being rejected from any of the schools I applied to, which means I didn't reach far enough, right?
You did fine.
Yeah, I did fine.
Now, listen, I want to ask the same question. If I asked Steve, your CEO at Xerox, what makes Dina special, what would he say?
I think what he would say is that I bring a unique perspective to the EC table. I'm not afraid to challenge and ask questions and make sure that we're all aligned before we make decisions. I'm also often the one calling us to remind us that we need to make a decision and that our teams are counting on us to make a decision before we leave the room.
And what would your husband and kids say to that question about what makes you special?
I think they would say my ability to balance. I don't think that my kids or my husband have ever felt work life took over to a point that they didn't feel special or valued, or that I was part of, you know, the daily struggles and wins of life, even if I was away. So when away, I use technology to stay connected and to be part of, you know, daily life. And so I think for them, it would be the balance.
I've heard a lot on this show, we've been recording for many years now, that balance is impossible. So I'd like you to go there a little bit more with us. How do you do it? What do you mean when you say balance? Because obviously sometimes the family takes over, sometimes the work takes over. How do you do it to make sure you're sort of achieving it in the long term?
I think that's the key, is that it has to be over a long term, right? In any one given day, week, or month, you're never going to be perfectly balanced between, you know, work and your personal life. But I think it's over the longevity of time, making sure that there are times when you prioritize each of those areas enough that over time it balances out, right? And so for me, it's about rules. I'm very organized with my time. And if it's not on my calendar, it doesn't get done. And so I create rules in my own life, right? There are things that I prioritize, time blocks I prioritize in the day or in the week or in the month that are either for work or for, you know, my kids or my husband. And I don't miss birthdays. It's one of my rules. And, you know, you can draw the line wherever you want to draw the line, right? But you have to draw some lines in order to create that balance.
Do you block time for yourself in that calendar?
I do. I do. I wake up early and I try to get gym in early in the morning as my first kind of thing. Well, my first indulgence is coffee. I do not start my day without espresso.
Me too.
And then I try to get gym in early because I feel that it gets me centered and grounded for the day, and that I have more energy in the day to be able to do more. I do try to block, even if it's 30 minutes for lunch, so that I can kind of pause, get up, go outside, get some sunlight, listen to a podcast while I'm eating, or do something different to get out of my headspace a bit.
What would you say is the key to success for today's CMO? If you said data, you wouldn't be the only one. At Deloitte, however, we believe data is only half of the equation. The other half, story. Because data is the language of business, but story is the language of humans. And we believe the most successful CMOs know how to harness the power of both data and story. To learn more about Deloitte's CMO program and how we can help today's CMOs succeed, visit cmo.deloitte.com. Now, since we met at Art Basel, that's not too long ago, your job, your title, and your scope has changed at Xerox. You were a CMO when I met you. We were doing a CMO roundtable, and you are now the Chief Growth and Disruption Officer at Xerox. That's quite a title. So tell us that story, Dina. You know, why did your company decide to put that position in place? You know, why you? And how has it changed your work and your approach to work versus, you know, 2 or 3 months ago?
Xerox is going through a reinvention. We're reinventing ourselves, right? Xerox is a 115 plus year company, legacy and icon, but something that was built for a different time, right? And has to evolve to the changing needs of our clients. Workplace has changed, work habits have changed, and the needs of our clients have changed. And so the reinvention has included an operating model change. We've shifted to a business segment-led operating model. It's also included an organizational structure change. So we've really, in some regards, flattened the organization in a way in terms of our leadership from the business segment perspective. And this particular position was created so that there was consistency from a commercial strategy perspective, right? Coverage strategy for sales. How do you decide what accounts or what segments of the market to cover directly with field sellers versus through virtual selling centers that we have versus through indirect channels that we have, right? So understanding how to optimize your coverage through all those routes to market, pricing, having pricing linked to that commercial strategy. Pricing was previously with finance, is now under my purview, and it sits with product marketing, go-to-market plans, coverage plans, route-to-market plans, so that you can really adjust your pricing strategy to your commercial goals and priorities. Client experience is also part of this, because the voice of the client has so much to do with how we design our go-to-market coverage, how we present our products in our own storytelling or our own brand and demand gen campaigns. So it's really interesting for me to be able to have kind of a 360 view of all these elements that are key to our commercial strategy, right? Sales productivity, sales enablement, sales operations, virtual sales, pricing, client experience. Such a great way to complement the marketing functions that I already had ownership for, which were brand, demand gen, comms, e-commerce, etc.
So it's early days. Are you enjoying it?
It's so much fun. It's a lot of work. It's, you know, obviously anytime you pick up several hundred people and in new organizations, you have a lot of learning to do, a lot of listening to do, but it's so much fun and the opportunities. You know, when I get my senior leadership team together now, they see the potential we have to actually disrupt the way we work internally as one group, as one unified, you know, commercial leadership team. It's amazing.
Now, this is still new. I know this was announced in January. I mean, I was part of many restructures in my career at P&G. One of the biggest ones is when we went from kind of regional profit centers to a global profit center by business line. And that was brutal. That was really, really, really hard. And business took a hit as we went through that. So what are you learning? I mean, I know it's early, but what are you learning with your leadership team, in your culture, on how to bring people along, engage everyone, use this as an opportunity to uplift the organization, be even more relevant for your customers? So I'm sure you're talking about that a lot in your leadership group, but what are you learning in the early days?
What I'm learning first is that there's a core group of people that were hungry for change here. And I think some of the decisions we're making, we're not going to get everything right, and it's going to be messy, and it's not, you know, it's not going to be perfect. There are going to be iterations along the way. But what we're seeing is that people respect the speed, the agility, the collaborative spirit that they're seeing in this decision making. So I think that's how you bring people along, and that's how you get the best ideas from the people around you, is first to demonstrate, you know, what the impact of a huge structural change like this, that is painful. We're saying goodbye to, you know, many colleagues that are great and have given this company, you know, decades of their lives. That's never easy. But also showing that how changes can make us act faster, be more relevant, respond to client needs in a more effective way. And giving people that empowerment to come to the table and say, no idea is crazy, bring it to the table, and let's think about it and let's evaluate it and see.
I've heard you talk in other venues about leadership, and you have some very clear beliefs about leadership. So I'd like to ask you, at this time in this new job where you're, I don't know, 6 weeks into it or so, what leadership skills for you are in overdrive right now? Are you really leveraging? And are there any new areas, you know, you're trying to work on to become even a more effective and inspiring and helpful and inspirational leader?
One of the ones that I continue to draw on is empathy, right? Trying to put myself in people's shoes right now and meet them where they are. And I have a very diverse team in tenure and experience. And so trying to meet them where they are and understand what they have to bring to the table, really leverage that, because my own experiences are limited, right? And so for me, it's about how do I actually get the most out of all these wonderful people I've now surrounded myself with and be able to amplify their impact in the company. And so getting to know some of them personally, I always try to dedicate at least part of my one-on-ones with my team. I'm very disciplined about one-on-one cadence with my leaders. And I always try to dedicate at least some of that to, you know, personally getting to know people and what makes them tick and what they do outside of work. And so right now I'd say I'm using that a little bit more. It's a little bit more in overdrive as I'm getting to know some new leaders who have joined my team. But, you know, I continue to just lean on things that have always been part of how I lead, right? Empathy was always part of how I led. Authenticity, courage, speed, execution. I love big ideas, but if you can actually have an operational plan to execute, does it move to the top of the bucket list of big ideas, or do we table that for now?
Well, you sound like you're cut out for the work.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun. It's really humbling, and I feel really honored to be given this much responsibility in Xerox's reinvention, and it's a great ride ahead. It's going to be challenging, but it's also going to be a lot of fun.
I want to go to this area of reinvention, and, you know, in my research for this show, I was just amazed at all the things you do now, Xerox. I mean, I knew you had changed. You're a much more diversified company and more work solutions, work products, but I kept saying, oh, wow, they do that too. So I want to talk a little bit about Xerox. I mean, it is in a short group of brands who became known for their category, right? We all remember that Xerox, that it's the place that Google takes, that Kleenex and Coke. So it's a very, very special place. But your selling line, your slogan years ago was the document company, right? And now it's we make work work, which obviously signals that you're a very different company with a wider scope. So changing people's mind about a brand that had such a firm kind of mental image with people is really hard. And you've been at that a while now, and you're at it again, you know, with this reorganization. What have you learned, people who've come before you, yourself, about changing people's mind about a brand when the imprint is so deep in people's minds? And there are some positives with the imprint, right?
There are. Last year, we launched the We Make Work Work campaign. It's an integrated brand and demand generation campaign, probably the first for Xerox in years. It was often a very siloed process here. We did a fully integrated end-to-end brand and demand gen campaign and really focused in on a few key areas of where and how we wanted to change people's minds. And the first one is actually what you mentioned, is people not knowing that we have this whole host of solutions and services that they would even think Xerox would offer them, right? I didn't know you do that. That's what we heard so much at customer and client sites whenever our CEO or any executive went out to visit. So part of it was changing the minds of people who already knew our products or our brand. And that's typically the 44 and over demographic. Mm-hmm. Right? That where we resonate, people have a very favorable reaction to our brand. So we had to build on those elements of innovation, of CSR and D&I. I mean, these were things that are part of the heart of Xerox as a brand, and we had to build on them. But we also had to introduce ourselves to a whole generation of people who have never made copies.
Yeah.
But, you know, work and want solutions to make their work better every day. So we honed in on kind of that 25 to 44 up and coming decision maker for IT products inside companies. And we looked at, you know, how do we meet them where they are and introduce ourselves in a way that piques their interest, makes them intrigued, right? Not necessarily shifting what they think about us, but actually piquing their interest in us. And so that's where we focused kind of the very bold and witty imagery and copy of this campaign, really talking about real life applicable solutions that we have in healthcare or in legal or in education to make people's work days easier, and using different tactics like out of home, digital display, New York Times, the paid content partnership that we did with them, TikTok. We tested some ads on TikTok. We did connected TV ads because we really wanted to focus in on the audiences that were watching streaming services. So, you know, it it's been really interesting. And then, of course, we did a lot of the traditional stuff that we do, right? LinkedIn and campaigns where we targeted people and companies that we were very interested in.
Yeah, I mean, what you said there is very fundamental, right? You started with the audience that is important for your future, and you're pretty specific about that. You're probably even more specific about business lines and so on. So if you don't have that clarity, you can't get anywhere. And it seems like such a simple principle. Start with the decision about the customers who are most important and how well you understand them, and then start creating how you're going to pique their interest. So I just want to underscore that lesson because it's very powerful.
Thank you. Yeah, that was actually a lot of fun, was getting to kind of the crux of who are we trying to reach and how are we going to reach them, mm-hmm. and testing out different tactics. And that was an example of giving people the opportunity to kind of fail forward, try things. Test them, try them out, small amounts, and then we optimize and we keep optimizing and optimizing as we get back for performance metrics.
We've all been there. You spend millions of dollars each year driving traffic to your company's website, and then the results come in and they're just not what you hoped. On top of that, 81% of marketing leaders say website ownership is a challenge. So, what do you do? Well, you switch to Webflow. Let me tell you why. Webflow's visual-first platform empowers your team to own your company's most valuable dynamic marketing asset, your website. From launching a new site to optimizing for SEO and conversions, Webflow gives you the tools you need to drive business growth fast. Unlock your website's full potential when you build, manage, and host with Webflow. Get started today at webflow.com.
When you're asked to talk about Xerox in front of an audience that doesn't know the brand well, maybe, you know, your kid's classroom or a group of your mom's friends or whatever it might be, how do you talk about it? Where do you start? What's your elevator speech?
So the first thing I say is, Xerox was always and continues to be the company that makes information dissemination easier for you, right? So if you think back to the beginning, Xerox was an administrative assistant's best dream and invention, right? Because what could they do? They could get really important reports or information in front of executives in a super fast and efficient way. Today, it's about you being able to either print what you need to be able to be on the go and have it available for you wherever you are, take notes, mark it up for those of us who are old school and like to do that. Mm-hmm. Or you can use us to digitize documents, convert long documents into audio files so you could listen to them while you're on a train. So it's always about making information get into the hands of those who need it in an easier way.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Sounds like you said it before.
Yeah. My kids did not know Xerox. So
Yeah, right. Now you have this expanded scope. You've been CMO before this. How do you think your work changes? I know, again, early days, but is there anything you miss about what you used to do? Or, you know, what do you think is going to be the biggest difference?
I think what I'll miss is probably being as close, as intimate with some of the campaign tactics as I was last year. I'll have to naturally step back a little to focus on some of the other areas, but I have great people to lean on there. So, you know, while I might miss it from the adventure or fun part of it, I have great people that will keep me apprised of everything that's going on along the way. So I'm not sad. I don't miss anything necessarily. I'm excited for how much more I get to be part of and be impactful in over the next year, and looking forward to it, really.
There are several CMOs who have moved on to be chief growth officers, right? There are very few that have disruption in their titles. In fact, I'm not sure we've had any on the show that have had disruption in their titles. So what does that mean to you about how you think about your job?
So the lovely thing about a company that has this tenure is the stability it provides, right? It's the longevity, the stability that this company has. But sometimes that also can lead you to take your eye off of the innovation and relevance perspective, right? How do you innovate to stay relevant in a changing world? And so we're in an industry that is being disrupted. Print has been in disruption for several years, right? Work habits are changing, people's habits are changing. And so I think for me, the disruption part of my title is really about how do we disrupt how we work from within, just as much as our industry is being disrupted from outside. And so there are real, true opportunities for us to align and invest in new areas internally. And it is really about finding those ways to do things differently.
As you think about how you spend your time, what do you think will be the biggest block of time in this job?
I think there will be a lot of the coverage and sales coverage, route to market, optimization. We need to meet people where they want to be.
Yeah.
And how they want to consume. And so it is really about finding the best way to leverage our indirect routes to market, our digital routes to market. That's where I think we'll spend a lot of time.
Yeah. I want to talk about your career path for a moment. And I find many things interesting in your career path, but two things especially. You took a gap year after college, and you thought then you would be a lawyer. And I think your parents were probably excited about that. But then you worked in a law office and decided it was not for you. So that's a pretty profound decision. So what did you learn about yourself back then? You finished college, you thought you wanted to be a lawyer, you took time in a law office and you said, uh-uh. So if you didn't take that gap year, we wouldn't be talking, likely. So what did you learn about yourself in that year?
Yeah, and I tell young people all of the time that they don't have to have it all figured out. You know, I had this trajectory when I was young. People would ask me what I wanted to be, and I'd always say a lawyer since probably elementary school. And then it wasn't until I actually got to working with lawyers that I said, not really sure this is what excites me, right? And luckily, I found that out before I went on to go to law school and invest, you know, 3 more years and a lot more student debt into getting that law degree. But, you know, what I realized was it was a very honorable and amazing profession, but it wasn't what was getting me excited out of bed every day. So I think people have to find that. And I often say internships or gap years working are the best ways to find out when you're a young professional, because you really don't know what you don't know. You can think that you understand a profession, but there's really no way to understand it until you're actually doing it or seeing people doing it. And so that was really important for me. And I still didn't have it figured out. I went to grad school. I wasn't 100% sure what I was going to do. I thought I'd go into international relations or diplomacy, the State Department. I had a lot of student debt. I was approached by a CEO, actually, who was a former alum of the Georgetown program that I went to. And he said, I have a management training program. I think you should come check it out. And I gave it a shot. I went for the, you know, couple days of interviews. And it sounded exciting. Tech was exciting. Mm-hmm. Distribution was exciting. It was challenging everything I was learning about cutting out the middleman and going direct. And here was this multi-billion dollar company that was the middleman and serving a purpose in the channel in technology.
That's the second area I wanted to talk about. You went to this company and met the CEO at a Georgetown event, and you went to the management training program and you stayed for 19 years. You're a bright, ambitious young leader. You probably had lots of opportunities, but you stayed with one company for nearly 2 decades. What was it about that company that kept you there, that made you feel like you wanted to be part of this, to spend a significant percentage of your life at this organization?
The people, number one. I would say I'm still very close to a lot of the people that, you know, friends that I made that I consider family today. Some people came and followed me to Xerox and are part of my new work family as well. What kept me there, I think, was, you know, the pace at which things changed. We were in the middle of so much change, right? Being a distributor for Cisco, Microsoft, HP, Lenovo, Dell, the pace at which you were able to learn and evolve and change. No day was like the day before. No year was like the year before. And then also I had the opportunity to grow, right? Throughout those 19 years where every couple of years I was changing responsibility, adding responsibility. And that also allowed me to feel challenged and fulfilled throughout those 19 years.
Was there a particular mentor in that time that was especially influential in your development as the leader you are today?
I had a few, and I say I take a piece of each of them, actually. So there's quite a few and such different styles. It's always so interesting to see, as you know, you're growing in your career, the different types of leaders you work for and what you can take from each of them as you develop your own leadership style. So I had quite a few. I was very, very fortunate.
I want to shift to the creative brief. And my first question for you, you may be the first person on this show who has built a brand platform for yourself, imdina.com, while you're doing your day job and being a mom and a daughter and a wife. So I just want you to talk about that. Why did you do it? And why do you keep doing it? How has this helped you in your evolution as a person, as a leader?
Yeah, so there's a couple of interesting things there. One is I did it in a way to give back initially. I was approached to speak at a women's event, let's say maybe 2015 or so, where it was my first time speaking on a very large stage, several hundred women in an audience. And I was asked to speak about leadership. And I gave some very personal stories, but also just some of my own perspectives about kind of what I did along the way to get where I got. But I was approached by so many young women after my talk who wanted to keep in touch or who would from time to time would want to check in and chat about work-life balance or their next career opportunity and how to think about it and what, you know, whether they should leave their company, go to another company, whether they should leave a particular function, go to another function. And I thought about the fact that, you know, along those 19 years, like I said, I never reported to a woman, even though I had these amazing mentors and bosses and people who championed me. There were certain topics I really didn't talk about with them, right? Mm-hmm. Balancing being a wife and a mom are quite unique. And sometimes men don't feel the same guilt that moms feel and the same pressures that moms feel. So I decided to put myself out there in a way that allowed people to kind of learn from some of my experiences, but also approach me to talk about things that maybe they didn't have somebody to talk about with in their own company or circle. That was my first kind of inspiration for creating it. But then it did also help me to think about myself as a brand. Mm. I said, you know, as a marketer, we market products. And if you think about yourself and you think about personal branding, which is a big thing these days, how do you market yourself as a brand? And what do you stand for? What's your purpose? How do you control your own narrative out there in the world? And so that was also another challenge for myself, was just kind of to think about myself as a brand.
How did you do that, Dina? Did you treat yourself like a brand? Like, did you have a framework? Did you do some research? Did you bring some people in?
I did. I brought people in, and absolutely, just like I do at Xerox, you go to agencies for help.
Yeah.
When you need, you know, fresh perspectives or outside in perspectives. And so I did. I went to a family member who has a small marketing agency, and I said, I've got a project. Let's do this. You know, how do we go about this? And we worked on the content and the framework and what we wanted to do. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been great. There are times where I have more time to dedicate it.
Sure.
Than others. Not blogging much these days, I can tell you, because I'm quite busy. So again, that's the balance, right? And you ebb and you flow over time.
How do you think that process helped you, thinking about yourself as a brand and making very clear your purpose and your values and your leadership principles? How did it help you?
Number one, it actually helped me land my job at Xerox.
Oh, interesting.
Recruiters found me. I think I became visible in a way that was probably a little bit different than I was before I had this branded platform and before I had a much more cohesive, you know, brand narrative out there about myself. So I think that's one way. But I think the other way is that people who are now in my organization or who, you know, were told they were moving into my organization as a result of this restructure, they have a sense of knowing me and what I'm all about already, right? They have a way to go find out what kind of person I am and what kind of leader they'll be working for.
Mm-hmm. What's the first brand you remember making an impact on you as a young girl?
Calvin Klein and the Brooke Shields jeans. That's one of those iconic brand moments for me in the 80s. Brooke Shields was just like the epitome of cool for me at that time. And the punchiness for the time of those ads and how then they built on it for many years to come.
Did you buy the jeans?
Of course.
Okay. That's great. Hey, you have on your bucket list a few things, but one is to write a book. So why is that important for you to write a book?
I love reading. I'm an avid reader, and I love reading stories about people that I admire. Andrew Nguyen is one of the people I followed a lot during my career, and I was so excited when she came out with her memoirs and autobiography. So for me, it's just kind of a challenge out there, you know, to be able to contribute back to the world in the form of writing.
Do you think it will be an autobiography or is it something else?
I think so. I think it'll be some form of it at some point in my life. Yes.
Have you thought about a title?
Not yet. I've thought about it. I have one, but I think it's changing. So
you don't want to share it?
I don't want to share yet. No.
How about some chapters? What would some of the most significant chapters be?
You know, I think as successful as I've been, I've also gone through some pretty tough times, right? As a person. And so I think it's important to kind of explain to people that you can go through kind of the worst moments in life and come through them and thrive still. So, you know, my dad was mentally ill. He was a schizophrenic and manic depressive, and that brought a lot of painful times as a child. It's not something people talk about. People are starting to open up about these things these days. You know, being able to demonstrate that you can go through things like that. My son had leukemia when he was just 3. So, you know, people deal with health challenges. Cancer has touched everybody's life at this point in their family or a friend circle somewhere, somehow. And so I think definitely chapters about how to get through the toughest of times and be able to come out surviving, thriving.
You should write the book, Dina. I heard you talk about when you got the phone call about your son. And very, very powerful and very poignant discussion of that. I mean, for our listeners, your son is now 16 or 17?
He is 16. He is healthy. He is strong, stronger than he knows, I always tell him. And he's doing great. But not everybody we met along the way was fortunate enough to have that same outcome.
He's starting to look at colleges soon, right? That'll be a fun adventure.
He is. It will be. I can't wait. He's in 10th grade. He has his permit. He's getting his license in a few months, which will be a whole nother reason to stay up at night.
Now, this is Women's History Month, and you said that you've never reported to a woman, which I think is incredible. But I would like you to speak a bit about the women in your life, either close or afar, who've been most inspiring for you. You mentioned Indra Nooyi from, you know, Pepsi and other places. I know her as well. She's amazing and the book is great. But what is it about Indra or others who have inspired you?
Indra, for me in particular, I always found her humor and, you know, just so interesting. She was able to be in very serious settings, you know, very important positions, but she always found a way to bring humor and just a very personal side to herself into conversations, right? How to balance being a mom and a wife with her CEO responsibilities. I loved it. And she always made me laugh. So that's what I actually took away from her along the way. But what I think is actually most important is that I have a group of girlfriends that I can count on and call up and stay connected with. And it's just so important. I have a group of women here in Miami. We get together, you know, at least hopefully once a month. We try to get together. We had our Galentine's dinner in February, and we always find an excuse to get together. I also have 2 really good friends that live apart from me in California and DC from college and grad school, and just staying connected with women that keep you grounded and inspired is just so important, in addition to having people, role models that you follow.
It's such an important point, because there's no agenda from those people other than each other and supporting each other and speaking honestly. I still get together at least once a year with the kids I grew up with. We spent 12 years in school together, and those very formative years from first grade to 12th grade, it's a gift. It is precious. We know each other so well, and we always pick a few topics to chat about when we're together. And of course, we laugh, we tell old stories, but we also talk about our life today. And it's just so, so good. So for our listeners, it is so important what Dina just said. It's certainly been a gift in my life. It's a gift in your life. And there's just nothing, very few things as important in life as that.
So true. And it's, you know, you can't take it for granted. You've got to put in the work and the effort and keep those friendships alive. It's so important.
That's a good note to end on. Dina, this has been such a wonderful discussion. Anything for me before we sign off?
No, this has been, it's been such a pleasure. I love listening to this podcast. I was listening to the Ulta Beauty episode.
It's a good one.
Today while I was eating. Yeah.
You two would get along, by the way, speaking of friends. There's no doubt you and Michelle would get along. There would be a soul bond there. I can tell.
Yes, I loved it. It was a great episode.
Thank you again. Happy Women's History Month. I hope you get to report to a woman one of these days, although it sounds like these guys have been pretty good.
Yeah.
You've had great relationships. But all the best in your new role, all the best at Xerox, and thank you again for this special episode.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. It's been fun. Happy Women's History Month.
That was my conversation with Dina. Three takeaways from this one for your business, brand, and life. The first one, aim higher than you think you should when setting out to apply to a school or go to a new job. I loved how Dina talked about how she applied to colleges. She was told by her counselors they were a stretch, and she got into all of them and thought, well, maybe I should have aimed a little bit higher. I think it's a great lesson. Don't doubt yourself and aim higher than you think you should. Second takeaway, this was a great discussion about balance in life or integrating your personal and professional life. Dina feels like her life generally is at balance if you take the long view. She's very organized in how she thinks about her time, she plans her time, and she thinks about her business, her family, and herself, and sharpening her saw, renewing herself. And the third takeaway, Dina talked a lot about personal branding. Now, that's a term we throw around a lot. It has some negatives among some people. I loved how Dina thought about creating her personal brand to sort of understand herself better, refresh herself, renew herself, decide on what her purpose was, what her values were, what she wanted to project into the world. So it was done for very personal reasons, and I think has helped her enormously in life. In fact, it led to her being discovered for this role at Xerox.
That's it for this episode of the CMO Podcast. If you found this helpful and entertaining, I would be so grateful if you could share our show with your friends. And I would be super happy if you subscribed so you can be updated as we publish new episodes. And if you really want to help, leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The CMO Podcast is a Gallery Media Group original production.